Hello and welcome to Friends in Your Ears, a podcast where podcaster Kathy Campbell interviews podcasters about their favorite podcasts on a podcast. I am joined today by two absolutely fantastic guests. I have with me David Voxmullen and Tony Sindelar. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello, nerds.
All right, David, if you can introduce yourself and let everyone know where they can find you on the internet.
Absolutely. I'm David Voxmullen. I am the founder and head producer of the DVM Production Empire, a podcast network that has been in business since 2009. And I am also a comedian and an entertainer and a singer-songwriter. And basically, I just don't know how to sit down. So you can find my personal website, davidvoxmullen.com, or you could find our network, dvmpe.com.
Perfect. What about you, Tony?
Well, probably you'd be most interested in where you can hear me, and that's on the usually on the Incomparable Network on a wide variety of shows. If you want to start, maybe Total Party Kill, our Dungeons & Dragons podcast, would be a good place to start for a lot of Tony-based content. And you can find me in non-audio text-based format on Twitter. I am at T. Sindelar. It's my first initial, last name. It's hard to spell.
It's all good because everything will be in the show notes. Hooray! Ooh. No spelling needed except for me, but thankfully I could just copy and paste.
It's true.
All right, so let's get started. David, how did you start listening to podcasts?
It started probably, I want to say, in 2006, 2007 maybe. I was touring with a band and, you know, obviously on the road, there's not a whole lot of activities you can do other than read. And I didn't really like reading. So I started with like books on, well, it used to be books on tape, but now just, you know, audiobooks. And I would put them on my iPod at the time. And I would listen to these audiobooks, and then I don't know where it happened, but somebody had mentioned, you know, podcasts, and I thought, oh, well, that sounds interesting. And it was still rather new in 2007, 2008. And so I started listening to, I believe it was The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack, which was arguably one of the more popular podcasts at the time about a TV show, Lost, which we all remember. And whether you liked it or hated it, it was appointment viewing. And, you know, my friends and I would always want to talk about the show. And when I couldn't find my friends to talk about it because I was, you know, out of town or whatever, I would find this Jay and Jack characters would hash out each episode of the TV show Lost. And I just couldn't get enough of it. So that was how I first started getting into the world of podcasts. And then I thought, well, if I like this, what other stuff do I like that maybe there's a podcast about? And I would find, oh my gosh, there's a podcast on music, and there's podcasts on acting, and there's podcasts on comedy. And so I fell in love with the medium instantly.
I have heard so much about Lost being one of those like trigger podcasts.
It really was. I don't know.
I think the complexity of the show that made people want to talk about it, as well as that was right about the time that iPods had the ability to get the podcast on the iTunes store and that sort of thing, made it easier for people to both make and receive the podcast. Yeah. So I think it just kind of was this perfect storm to make it just that magical show that made people easily want to talk about it and listen about people.
Yes, absolutely. And around the network here, we refer to it as water cooler discussion. And so it really had become that.
Mm-hmm. I love it, love it, love it. All right, Tony, what about you?
Around the same time, back in, I think, 2005, 2006-ish, I was working in an IT job at a university, and my job was basically to help professors use technology in their teaching, and as part of that, I tried to keep up on kind of new and emerging technologies, and so podcasts were a thing that, I think we thought it was going to be a really big thing before it was a big thing, so we thought this would be a thing that professors would start using. And there were some early educational podcasts. It was, the early days, I had to really like go back and like look through my email and all my history of like, when did I first start listening to stuff and what were some of the early podcasts. And there was this kind of weird early Wild West where there was a bunch of kind of amateur stuff, and some of it was like there was, it was well before even people had cheap, decent mics, so there was lots of stuff recorded on just built-in laptop microphones.
Oh, wow.
And under non-ideal audio conditions. And I think there was kind of a mix of the popular stuff back then was NPR stuff made available as podcast, and then other kind of weird things. I remember being a pretty devout listener of This Week in Technology. I think kind of relaunched itself as a podcast right in that era. And I've pretty much for most of my adult life had a lengthy public transit based commute. So listening to podcasts on an iPod or later an iPhone has kind of been a staple of my existence for, you know, several hours a day for a long, long time now. I remember even I had a car that did not have a jack such that I could plug my iPod in. And I remember burning podcasts onto CDs that I would then just throw out once the podcast, because I wasn't going to listen to them again, because
right.
They would be, you know, news-based things. But yeah, I would have, you know, a CD-ROM with like 11 random podcasts burned on it to listen to on like a long road trip or something like that. But it was this kind of very weird mix of who was getting into stuff, who thought it was going to be a thing that they'd make money on, you know, and I think there was an early push for a lot of technology-based news stuff was definitely an early thing. And, you know, some of those stuck around longer than others, and some of them were better than others. Yeah.
Well, and it definitely makes sense with the tech side of things, because podcasts did include the need for some sort of tech knowledge. Like,
yep.
You had to know how to record and maybe do some edits to it,
yep.
But at the very least, like, how to get it on the internet.
Sure. And even that was, in that day, was pretty crude and limited. I mean, I remember I would teach workshops for faculty on how to do this, and I think at the time, with free tools, we had this rather convoluted workflow where they would basically use WordPress to generate the feed, and the stuff had to be loaded into a WordPress blog in the right way, and the file had to be somewhere and linked the right way. And it was like, very few faculty were actually doing it on an active basis. There were a couple, but it was like you had to jump through a lot of hoops to get there.
Oh, man. I'm so glad it's so much easier now. You just get a Squarespace site or a Simplecast or something, and you can just throw it up and boom, it's done and easy, and you don't have to get too much of a headache, unless you want to get extra complicated using a podcast network. But they've all built the step-by-step instructions usually, so it makes it not too difficult, which is great.
Yeah. I don't know. They've always, it's the weird, funky homemade stuff has always, I think, had a lot of charm for me. I think for some people it's kind of a turnoff, but I don't know. I like zines. I like underground comics. There's lots of weird things that very much reflect who the person is that are making them. That to me, there's a charm to that. Whereas other people look at it, it feels like an unfinished work. But I enjoy that.
All right, David. So what made you want to actually start making podcasts?
Well, you know, and it's interesting, Tony kind of touched on that a little bit, and you did too when you were talking about people who had recording knowledge. Being a musician, I had recorded plenty of albums, produced a lot of projects, so I already had sound engineering experience. And so as I was listening to my favorite shows and realizing I was getting hooked and addicted to these things, I started putting on my producer hat and going, well, I would do this a little different, and I probably would make this change here, and I might edit things a little differently here, and I might boost this here or put some polish here, you know, that sort of a thing. And after a while, I realized, why am I doing this to other people's already, you know, produced things? I should just produce my own. And that's really how this whole monster started for me. I didn't want to compete with Jay and Jack. So I didn't want to do a Lost podcast, and Lost was kind of winding down when I got started. So I started looking for what I hoped to be the next Lost, and what that was, right or wrong, what I ended up choosing was the ABC television show Flash Forward. And for those of you who remember, it didn't last past one season. But I threw all my eggs in that basket. I invested money, I invested time and energy. I got my mates to record with me, and we were guilty of recording the first episode or two on the laptop until we like, no, we got to do this better. But by the time the show had actually started to air, we had done 4 or 5 episodes previously, just talking about what we knew about the show in production and how it was based on a novel and you know, just things we had hopes and for the program. That just before the first episode actually aired, the co-executive producer of the show actually reached out to me and said, hey, just want to let you know, we love everything that you're doing. And by the way, we're the ones making the show. And I just exploded. I was like, oh my gosh, how in the world? You know, it was, you know, just, I was walking on air. So ever the capitalist, the next thought was, would you like to be on our show? to which, and I want to do him justice. His name is Quentin Peoples, who he at the time was scarcely known in the industry. He had a few projects under his belt, but he has since gone on to do some mega, mega stuff. He's working for Marvel right now, so he's doing okay. But back then, he reached out and just said, hey, you know, we love what you're doing. You're on the right track. We're getting a kick out of it. And so I immediately said, let's get you on right away after the first episode airs. And at the time the episode aired, it was like record-breaking in numbers, and it had like the highest rated premiere of any television show ever at that point. So we thought, you know, hey, we hitched our sails to the right boat, you know. And then literally that was the best it did. And then every week it just started slipping and slipping and slipping and slipping. It got down to a point where ABC was threatening to, you know, cancel the show. And Quentin had actually, I don't know if I can say this story. Someone had reached out to me. Yeah, see, it doesn't matter. You don't have to edit it. It's fine. Okay. It's all water under the bridge now. But he reached out to me and said, hey, we're in big trouble. If there's anything you could do to get the, you know, the fan base motivated, let us know. So I actually put together this giant, well, I had planned it to be nationwide, but it ended up being worldwide, pseudo protest, don't cancel our show campaign, which got news coverage across the country, multiple events in different countries. And we did this, I don't know if you're familiar with the show, but it was based that everybody around the world blacks out for 2 minutes and 17 seconds. So we staged a 2 minute and 17 second blackout.
Wow.
So, and it was almost like a flash mob around the world. And we synced it up across the world. So it was, you know, same time everywhere. And we did this thing where everybody did it. And, you know, it was sweet. Like, some cities had like 30, 40 people. Some cities had like 4, you know. but when it was all said and done, you know, everybody sent in videos, and then we cut together this beautiful edited piece that just showed everybody doing, you know, the protest. And it was just a very sweet, weird moment where we, the fans, were able to feel connected to a show that we were loving, and they were connecting to us. And I know that on a previous episode, you had one of my counterparts, Ian, on, and he talked about how they wrote him into the script.
Yeah.
They actually wrote us all into the script in different points, and it was just, it was so amazing and phenomenal. And to ironically flash forward a few years ago, I was finally able to get to California and actually sit down and have dinner with Quentin, and it was just a beautiful thing.
That's
and
awesome.
Oh, it was just an amazing thing. But to make a long story short, as I've gone around the world across the street, I would say after Flash Forward was canceled, I had thousands of listeners who were emailing us going, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do next? And I had no idea. I had spent all this money on web domains, and I had, you know, all this server space, and I didn't know what to do. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll try another show. So I had gotten some insider info on a new show that was coming starring Jason Ritter called The Event on NBC. I thought, new network, new show, we should be good. Bought more domains, got things started, produced the program, had almost everybody who starred on that show on our podcast. It was phenomenal. It was a blast. And then that show got canceled. And so it started getting to a point where it was like, I don't know what I'm going to do here. So then the next show I did was Torchwood, because they were going to bring it to Stars, and that lasted a season. So I was I was going broke fast, and my wife was getting very frustrated with my hobby. And I was about ready to throw in the towel, and then it was like a 2 a.m. epiphany I had, and I kind of did one of these video vlog rant things that's still out there, where I just kind of snapped one day and said, you know what? Instead of trying to guess what singular show is going to work, how about I cast a huge net and do every new show that's being produced on the major networks? And so literally I convinced a bunch of my very talented friends to jump together with me, and we just picked and chose which shows we wanted to do. And we had, I think it was about 14 high concept TV show podcasts that we were going to fan cast about. And I think all of them got renewed. And so it was just this big joke, like, oh my gosh, now we're stuck. We got to do this stuff. And so we kept doing it, and we kept bringing in podcasters, and we kept bringing in new shows. And long story short, yep, we've turned it into this giant empire. And to date, we have produced almost 100 different podcasts. And we are currently doing, I want to say, 50 shows live right now. So,
wow.
And that's with at least 50 or more contributors across around the world. And it's just been an amazing ride. And just this year, we've finally opened up. We've drawn back the curtain, and we've extended our knowledge and experience to the public. So now we're offering hosting services and production and distribution to all of the networks that we distribute to. Literally, it was at a fraction of the cost of every other commercial service that's out there right now, and we're having a blast.
So much fun. I'm so glad you broke the jinx by just opening it up to everyone, because how traumatizing would it have been?
It was a legitimate internet joke that don't let David Vox Mullen do a podcast about your favorite show because he will kill it.
Oh, that's so funny.
We actually decided to do a Doctor Who show, and oh my gosh, people were freaking out. They were like,
if you don't kill Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, I love it, the history. Well, and now that you've gotten past that jinx, you're good.
Oh yes,
right?
Yeah. No, so it's great.
Awesome. All right, Tony. So I know technically you kind of made podcasts for the other educators at your job, but what about podcasts that you enjoy making?
So I think I really kind of stumbled into it backward, perhaps in a couple cases kind of dragged by friends. But I think my kind of early interest in podcasting was very much tied to the early days of Twitter, you know, in that 2005 to 2010 era when Twitter was still kind of emerging. But I was in graduate school in a place, somewhat rural area, more than like 100 miles away from like the nearest big city where most of my friends lived. I had a job that wasn't great and I wasn't super happy with. And so I felt very kind of isolated, and Twitter was this way that kind of I met people. I stayed in touch with people I knew who were kind of far away, and also got to meet lots of their kind of friends and Twitter celebrity type. Not that I met them, but follow those types of people on Twitter. And that was really kind of a really important like way of feeling connected to people when I was in a place where I was not kind of geographically that connected to people. And some of those people were very into podcasting or talking about their podcasting. There was kind of a switchover from like everybody's talking about their blog and everything's a blog post to maybe everything is a podcast, maybe. So I was listening to some of the early podcasts, and my friend Dan Morin, who appears on The Incomparable pretty regularly and has his own shows there, he and I had a podcast around 2008, which it's not available on the internet anymore. We are committed to someday remastering it and re-releasing it when we need to promote something. But yeah, we and that was, it was kind of a very strange, not heavily formatted comedy podcast where Dan and I would just talk on Skype for like 3 hours, and then Dan would edit it down to like 30 minutes that were actually funny. And I guess kind of we were inspired to do that, or at least I was inspired to do that in part by the You Look Nice Today comedy podcast, was kicking around then, probably around 2008, 2009. And flash forward a couple years after that, Jason Snell, who I certainly had not met him, but I don't even know how well I knew him, had started the Incomparable podcast in around 2010, and which was a first just a podcast and later a podcast network with the very broad mission of covering various geek culture things. And I guess Jason Snell did not know enough people back then. So Dan brought me along to various shows, especially shows about topics that I guess there was less interest among Jason's friend in talking about, specifically tended to be comic books and video games, the early Marvel movies and whatnot. So I got kind of, I guess I got in the first year before that network would swell to have, you know, zillions of contributors, and did that for many years. And that was like a great way of kind of staying in contact with people who had moved to the other side of the country and making new internet friends. Some of my best, closest internet friends I've made in the last 5 years were through that network or adjacent to that. Along the way, in around 2014, we basically, so the Incomparable, if you're not familiar with it, it's kind of panel discussions of various geeky media. I think at some point we basically said we should play D&D as a joke, and we did that for one episode, and that was popular enough that it was spun off into its own podcast, Total Party Kill, which we've been doing since 2014, and I'm a player on a bunch of those episodes, and I've run several adventures as a dungeon master, and we've been doing that for many years now. And it's one of those things where, you know, if you'd asked me like 10 years ago, you know, would you be interested in playing Dungeons and Dragons on the internet for the amusement of other nerds? I would be like, that doesn't make any sense.
Like,
who needs that? Who needs that? Yeah. And there are people that listen amazingly. And in some ways, I think we actually kind of stumbled into that format early. There's kind of a golden age of Dungeons and Dragons podcasts right now with people who are much funnier than I am playing Dungeons and Dragons on the internet for your amusement that you can seek out. But that was something I've been doing for several years. So yeah, that's how I stumbled into it.
Well, it's fantastic to have you on specifically to talk about Total Party Kill, because it tends to be a very common mention on this show in particular. Mm-hmm. So thank you for joining me and being one of those people that are on the show that other people talk about. Mm-hmm. All right, so we are now off to the main topic of sorts. David, what is your favorite podcast to listen to and why? And yes, you may have more than one answer. That is acceptable.
I can tell you the one that I absolutely hate to listen to, which is the David Vox Mullen Show. Because once I record it, I never listen to it. And that's just my cheap plug. No, I would say probably for a long time, I was a big listener of The Nerdist. I really loved how Chris Hardwick basically did what I'm trying to do a few years earlier. And so I tried to study kind of his path of success and things like that. And I just loved the way he interviewed different guests. And so I try to mirror that as best I can when I have the opportunity to have somebody who is somewhat well known on my show. But that seemed to kind of slow down. I've been listening to Mark Maron, the WTF podcast. And also the Mike Rowe podcast, for those of you who know Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs. He is a very short and simple, and if you like Mike Rowe at all, this is right up your alley because it's very much Mike Rowe. It's called The Way I Heard It. And what he does is he will take maybe 5 minutes and he will tell you a story in his own timbre, which is glorious to listen to. And he tells you this story about an individual, and this individual has a story in you know, whether it's in America or in another country, and usually it's a story of either success or failure, but it's at the end of the episode he reveals who this person is, and it's usually somebody very famous. And at the end of it, he always tags it with, "Anyway, that's the way I heard it." And so it's a beautiful show, and I like to rack those up and just listen to those when I'm on the road. And that's probably my favorite podcast to listen to right now. Probably because I might have a slight crush on Micro. I don't know, but we'll just, and I don't know why. I'm admitting this on your show, but I just love listening to that man's voice, and he can tell a heck of a story. And so that is my favorite podcast to listen to right now.
There's something about that show in particular really reminds me of back in the day, listening on the radio to now, you know, the rest of the story.
That's so funny. We used to have that as a running joke on one of my earlier podcasts. I think it was for Flash Forward. Whenever one of my friends would reference NPR or PBS or whatever, I would always do the, "And now you know the rest of the story." And it just, it would just light up. And that's funny that you said that, because that's been a running joke for us for years.
I love it. Yeah. And I too have a crush on Micro. Okay. He is so fantastic.
There you go.
And he seems like just one of those really good people.
Yeah.
Like you just want to go hang out with.
Yeah, very much, very much. Let's work on that. Let's see if we can go have let's go have a beer with Mike Rowe.
Yes. All right, Mike. I'm tweeting this episode to you. We're gonna get connected and we're gonna go have a beer. All right? Okay, so now it's official.
If my wife is listening, I'm sorry.
And my husband will listen, and he knows it, so he can join us. All right, Tony, now that we're gonna separate from Micro time.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? What is your favorite podcast?
All right. Well, I'm gonna list two. You know, This American Life is, I feel like it's a cheat because it's also just a radio show, but it is available in podcast format, and I've been listening to it as a podcast for over 10 years, and it goes right up to the top of my list. In terms of I listen to it as soon as it comes out, whereas other podcasts sometimes pile up. I guiltily admit I'm subscribed to probably about 45 podcasts. Don't want that to hit 50. 50 is too many.
Yes.
And I was looking at my Overcast today, and it's like I have 80 unlistened to podcast episodes, and I feel guilty about that. I don't know if I hit 100, do I have to just declare podcast bankruptcy and start over? So you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there. I have a lot of friends that have a lot of podcasts. I have a lot of friends who individually themselves have a lot of podcasts, perhaps too many. There's right. People who are like, how many hours of my life do I need to spend listening Amen. To you? You're great, but yeah, you're great, but there's a lot of you. I have, you know, some of my podcast friends live nearby, and I've had the thing where it's like I ran into somebody on the street where while I am listening to their podcast, and it's like, ah, now I'm going from the recorded version of your voice to the, a conversation with you. This is strange.
Yes.
And I guess this is the future. We're living in it right now. So This American Life, in terms of I've been listening to it for a long, long time, and I just like that. And I would assume that most people are familiar with the format and the idea of This American Life because it's been around on National Public Radio for forever.
Yes.
So let me list one that's more podcasty in terms of it's only a podcast. And I was looking through my list of 45 podcasts, and it's like there's some tech stuff, and there's comedy stuff, and there's a bunch of NPR stuff, and there's news, and it's a pretty diverse range of things, and I guess I'm happy with that. But I will say the one that is certainly my favorite right now is a podcast called Dragon Friends. It's in the aforementioned people play Dungeons and Dragons for your amusement genre, but it is my favorite of all of those. Dragon Friends is a podcast put out by some Australian improv comedians playing Dungeons and Dragons, and they are some of the funniest people I've ever heard. It makes me laugh out loud consistently. It's very joyful. It's also they're the least concerned with the rules of Dungeons and Dragons, which is for the best. Again, I don't totally believe that thousands of people listen to the Incomparable Panelists play Total Party Kill, because we argue about the rules and we spend a bunch of time in combat. And, like, we edit out the parts where we get really stuck and have to flip through a book, but there's still discussions of rules. And the Dragon Friends do not do that, except when it is amusing, when they shout at each other. And it's very funny. It's been going for a couple years now. There's several discrete campaigns. I don't know. The audio quality is not always the greatest for the first season, so maybe jump in for the second season. In addition to its improv comedians, and they're hilarious, and they have Australian accents, which may be an initial charming feature if you're not from Australia like I am. They also have live music performed with them, so they have someone, they perform in front of a live audience that gets recorded, which definitely adds to their energy. But they have someone up on stage with them who's kind of improvising background music, which is just amazing. I don't think the Total Party Kill will ever have that in our budget, but that's a dream. And there's the music cues are even used for comedy at times, and it's quite funny. I really love it. And it's just kind of this ridiculous, hilarious, nerdy thing that they've been doing for several years now. So Dragon Friends.
It says a lot that you can be on Total Party Kill playing Dungeons & Dragons, and then your favorite podcast is another Dungeons and Dragons podcast. Like, it says so much about just you as
mistakes.
A person.
Mistakes also, have been made, yes.
Yeah. No mistakes made. This is your personality. It's all good. Own it. Mm-hmm. Be that nerdy self. Which have.
You know, Dungeons & Dragons is kind of experiencing a renaissance in terms of lots of people are discovering it in the new version, and Dungeons & Dragons podcast and video shows on YouTube are really popular right now. And, like, I think it's great. I mean, I think role-playing games are, they are ridiculously nerdy, but something that's kind of beautiful to them is that there is this kind of social element of them, and they are so much what you decide to make of them and what you create together at a table with a bunch of other weirdos. And I really enjoy that people are kind of rediscovering these now. Video games are obviously great, and as something that brought me a lot of joy in life, but it's very much like this designed experience that somebody creates for you, and you sit and experience that, whereas role-playing games are something you very much create together as a group, and that might be very serious, and it might be very performative, or it might be, a lot of them tend to be very wacky and very far off the rails, and I think that's great, and I hope more people discover that. I think something we hear a lot from our listeners is like, this is like, I've heard this story like 100 times, and it feels kind of sad, but also there's a beauty that they've discovered a podcast that fill this niche is like, I had the books for Dungeons & Dragons when I was a kid, and I would sit and read the books alone, and I didn't have any friends to play it with. And that's why I like listening to your podcast. Even there are the second story is, I played it a bunch in high school or junior high or college, and now I'm a grown up and I don't have any time, and my friends live far away, and I can live vicariously through listening to you nerds play Dungeons and Dragons. And that makes me happy. And maybe those people will find some time or some nearby friends someday, or play over the internet if that's something they want to do. Because, it's Dungeons & Dragons is a ridiculous game that I think can be a lot of things for a lot of people. So it could be a way they can connect with people, can play, explore different roles. I think it is exciting seeing my friends play it and just, play with different roles, like being a leader, being more confident than they might be in the everyday setting, exploring things with gender identity. There's a lot you can do with that game, including just be a wacky goofball and have silly fun and, make fun of the ridiculous fantasy tropes that are kind of hackneyed and played out over and over again. But that's part of the delight. So, yeah.
To add to what Tony was saying, or he mentioned earlier, and I wanted to point this out, being an improviser myself, you don't have to be an improviser to play D&D or to be a podcaster, but I've noted that the majority of the really talented ones happen to be improvisers. And that goes for podcasting as well. A lot of improvisers are excellent podcasters. Not all podcasters are excellent improvisers. Mm-hmm. But if you need podcasters for anything, look into your improv community, because they are ready, willing, and capable.
Yeah, for sure. I also love the exploration of imagination that D&D brings. My daughter is 9 and she plays D&D with my brother and my husband, and having her come home from one of those sessions and just be, "Mommy, I got to do this, this, this." And it just, like, the sheer joy and excitement of it just is amazing. And it's great to spread the nerddom to her generation as well, and see it be not as looked down upon nowadays either. So there's other things, of course, that society will say is stupid, but
there's still plenty.
Yes, there's plenty of things on the list.
Yeah. One of the things I like about it, I've been running several adventures for Total Party Kill now, and being the dungeon master is kind of an amusing role, because sometimes you're kind of the straight man in the joke a lot. It's the dungeon master's role, I feel like, is the players do ridiculous things, and you're there to be like, well, this is the background painting I'm making here. But something I've really enjoyed as I've gotten more into it, strangely, as, you know, well into my, this is not something I did as a teenager or really even in college, it's something I discovered in my 30s, you know, my professional background is as an educator, and, you know, teaching and being an educator really kind of lies at this, I find, really delightful intersection of planning and planning a lot, but then also kind of improvising, like, knowing what to do when things don't go as planned, or reacting to what's going on, or being able to respond to what your students are doing. And for a long time, that was like a big part of my kind of professional identity and what I would do all day. And I always kind of felt sad that it's like, I don't really think there's a version of that I get to share with, like, my friends and family. And ridiculously, I think that there's actually a lot of transfer between teaching and being a dungeon master.
I'm sure your students would agree. Yeah,
maybe. There are differences. I want to be very clear about that for the sake of my job. There are very important differences. But, like, it is a place where I get to take some of the skills that I have created in one area and bring them into another area to amuse friends and even listeners occasionally. So, yeah.
I love it. I love it so much. It makes me happy. Okay. So, final question. Are you ready?
The final question for the new car.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Okay. So, you guys are getting an action figure. There's a David Vaxmullen action figure, and we have a Tony Sindelar action figure. What accessories come with your action figure, and what is your catchphrase that when you push the button, it says?
Let's see. Well, mine definitely has to come with an oversized ego that you could attach to it. No. I would say probably a microphone, for sure. And I know that's a cliche, but it really does fit me. And the catchphrase. I'm trying to think what would be a good catchphrase for me. Something that I would say, or something others would say I would say, is really the issue. I don't know.
My middle name is Vox.
Yeah. My middle name is Vox. I like that. I like that. You want to hear me do an impression? Maybe that's what. Maybe that's what.
There we go.
Do you guys like impressions?
Brilliant. All right, Tony, I think I guess what your catchphrase would be.
Yeah, I'm very catchphrase driven. Sorry, it's just how I am. So we'll get it out of the way right away.
Well, give me some.
My catchphrase has become "Hello, nerds," which is a thing that, believe it or not, I just say in real life and started saying on podcasts as a greeting that people found very delightful, and now I say it all the time because people continue to be delighted by it, and that amuses me. which is literally just a thing I got into the habit of saying at work. Here's the backstory behind it. I was trying to get myself out of the habit of saying "Hello, guys" when addressing a group that included men and women, and so I would frequently, you know, I worked in an IT role, and I would walk across the hallway to the help desk to check in with them, and there'd be a room full of nerds who I'd need to help out with various things, and I would just start saying "Hello, nerds," and it made them very happy. They just felt incredibly kind of welcomed and seen by that, and that was not a derogatory term for them. And they just, like, people told me that was one of the favorite things about their day, was when I would show up at 10 and say, like, "Hello, nerds, how's it going? What's the problems this week?"
Oh my goodness.
And you know, it makes people happy. And I like that because it's just a few words that I'm saying. So that's, I think we got to get that out of the way as a catchphrase. I got a couple other ones because that's how I work, but you can hear those on podcasts. I'm not a very, action oriented person. So the action figure of Tony is not, I don't know how many movable parts. he may just be in a sitting position at a chair. But he needs some accessories. You know, for a long time, I'm now getting old and I have bad knees, so I don't play anymore. But I, for many years of my life, I was a devout Ultimate Frisbee player, and I would literally walk around with a Frisbee a lot. I think that was my standard things, is I would either have a laptop computer tucked under my arm or a Frisbee, or in various times in college and grad school, one under each arm. So I feel like that would be a you know, if you needed a prop, that would be what the action figure of Tony would come with, is a Frisbee and a, you know, a laptop, an Apple laptop that's probably been dropped too many times.
A little dented, a little scratched, yeah, a little dented, a little loved.
Yeah, I had a computer that, like, the hinge was just held together by duct tape and couldn't actually be moved. It just had to be propped against a desk for a couple years. So that's, you know, a well-loved Apple computing device would be my other action figure accessory.
That's fantastic. Oh, thank the perfect answer, both of you. It makes me super happy. I love it. These bonus questions are some of my favorite questions to ask. Like, don't get me wrong, obviously talking about podcasts makes me really happy, and hearing everyone's origin story about podcasts and all of that. But the bonus questions, and I don't pick out the question until, like, usually the middle of the podcast. And so there's just one in my long list that comes to me that's perfect. And this is just another example of the perfect question to ask both of you gentlemen.
What does the Kathy Campbell action figure say and come with?
Definitely a unicorn horn.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about a catchphrase, though.
Look at you people with your full lives that are fully realized.
I won't lie, Tony. I was jealous of how well you know yourself, because
it's a curse and a blessing. So, you know, I'm an open book, but it's a short read. So yeah.
I don't know. I will leave it to the listeners. Tweet to me at Mrs. Soup is my Twitter, and the show is at Friends and Ears. Tweet what you think my catchphrase should be. And you can also find David Vox Mullen at David Vox Mullen. Links will be in the show notes, so you don't have to worry about spelling that correctly. Same for Tony Sindelar is T Sindelar. You can find us online at friendsinyourears.com, and we are part of the absolutely incredible, incomparable network. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Episode number 10. We made it to 10. We're two hands now. Hooray! And I hope you all have an absolutely fantastic day.